helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. There's a basic law of physics that two physical bodies cannot occupy the same space at the same time. But can two theories of politics be ascendant at the same time? Now, there are those who believe in liberty and justice for all, while others believe it should be reserved to, well, people who are special. Freedom of speech and censorship cannot coexist. Neither can justice and tyranny. Over the last few decades, many have watched while freedom of speech was replaced first by political correctness and then outright censorship. Justice has been replaced with political power, and science has been replaced by consensus. These antithetical ideas of how we live and govern cannot peacefully coexist. Either one will be in power or the other. In the battle of wills over how the people of the United States will be governed, whose ideas will win and whose will lose? What theory will go on to help us guide our country through the 21st century? And what ideas will be crushed? Take a look at which wagon you have hitched your future to. Are the wheels solid and true, or are they falling off? Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study. This is where we read. We study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. So I think it should not be a surprise that in my theories of which political theory should win, which wagon have I hitched my future to, it'd be the side of liberty, of justice, of freedom, and not the tyranny of censorship and political correctness, political prosecutions, and generally overall tyranny. Now, I know we've spent years, decades even, under this myth, you know, everybody wins, nobody loses, everybody gets a prize. The problem is two competing ideas cannot coexist equally. It's this cognitive dissonance we've all become so comfortable with does not work. In the real world, it does not work. One will win and one will lose. Now, interesting enough, I've seen another announcement of articles of impeachment. Now, I have not had a chance to read these. These were filed by Representative Greg Stube of Florida. And he doesn't actually have the articles on his website, and I haven't found them on the House website either. But he makes a couple of interesting points. And remember, we've had articles of impeachment before, and most of the ones that I've seen, they're political statements. They're not actually articles of impeachment. You have to remember, the president or vice president or other officers of the United States can be impeached for, well, basically three things: treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Those, by the way, are not two separate ones. You know, high crimes are crimes, and misdemeanors are simply bad behavior that doesn't quite rise to a crime. Now, most of the impeachment articles I've seen in the last couple of years, they're political statements, right? Oh, this person's bad. He didn't do his job. Hardly enough to consider rising to a misdemeanor. But there's some interesting ones in Mr. Stube's his article. Now, he has a press release, and in that press release, he lists, four articles of impeachment. The first, he lists as abuse of power, bribery, Hobbs Act extortion, and honest services fraud. He says, Robert Hunter Biden, known as Hunter Biden, and James Biden sold access to then Vice President Joseph Robin Biden Jr. While he was in office from 2009 to 2017, and sold promised access to a future Biden presidential administration while he was out of office from 2017 to 2021. Hunter and James appeared to have promised official actions by Joe Biden in return for payments and business opportunities from foreign and domestic business partners. Joe Biden assisted by making appearances, phone calls, meetings with the business partners, and knowingly allowing his family members to promise access to him and actions by him in furtherance of these schemes. Hunter Biden threatened business partners that official action would be taken against them if they did not meet terms or make payments. In at least one instance, Hunter Biden implied that Joe Biden was aware of these threats and willing to assist in enforcing the threats, potentially through official actions. Hunter Biden attempted to enrich himself and the Biden family by threatening official actions from his father, who he claims was willing to assist in the scheme. Now, this is very interesting because what we're talking about is bribery. Bribery is defined as getting something of value to encourage an action or a decision to what's meant. The term is to coerce, to pervert, right? So you get something in exchange for something. And what we see is, I do say there's been evidence of bribery. It has not been adjudicated yet, but we're not talking about a criminal trial. We're talking about an impeachment, and that's an important distinction. You see, Joe Biden is still has due process rights. An impeachment is not a criminal activity. It's a question about whether or not he will be removed from office. What's interesting is, all right, so you have bribery, but he's also claiming violations of the law. Under Article 1 in the press release, Representative Stubbe says, these acts are abuses of power as well as the following federal crimes or conspiracy to commit the following federal crimes. Bribery of public officials, 18 U.S.C. 201. Hobbs Act extortion under the color of official right, 18 U.S.C. 1951. Honest services fraud relating to use of official position, 18 U.S.C. 1346. So here he's actually quoting federal crimes. So he's pointing out to bribery, but he's also showing crimes while Mr. Biden was in office. So this is the first one I've seen that where you're actually quoting criminal activity. Let's see, Article 2, obstruction of justice. According to the testimony from IRS whistleblowers, members of the Biden campaign improperly colluded with Justice Department officials to improperly interfere with an investigation into tax crimes alleged to have been committed by Hunter Biden. These acts constitute an abuse of power as well as obstruction of justice under 18 U.S.C. sections 1505, 1510, and 1512. Again, actual crimes. I'm beginning to like this guy. I hadn't heard much of him before, but here we go. Article 3, fraud. James Biden recruited investors for business ventures that ultimately failed. There is evidence that suggests that these investment opportunities were sold to investors based on false and fraudulent pretenses and promises. Access to Joe Biden and indication that Joe Biden would support these schemes were used to lure investors into these schemes. These actions constitute fraud and conspiracy to commit fraud in violation of 18 U.S.C. sections 1943 and 1949. Okay, this one's a little weaker in my point of view. Because right now what you have is what I believe is primarily uncorroborated witness testimony. So I think Article 3 is a bit weak. Article 1 and 2, I think, have some merit to them. Article 3, yeah. Let's look at Article 4, financial involvement in drug and prostitution. Joe Biden and Hunter Biden have a long history of commingling and intertwining finances. Between 2010 and 2019, thousands of dollars of Biden family money was spent on illegal drug transactions and prostitution. These acts constitute violations of or conspiracy to violate federal drug laws at 21 U.S.C. 841, 842, 843, and 846, and federal prostitution laws as 18 U.S.C. 2421, 2421A, and 2422. Okay, I didn't notice it, but he actually has a link to the actual articles and pieces at the bottom of the press release. I didn't see that when I first went through this. But here's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing four of the four articles. Two of them, I think, have a fairly sound ability. And, well, two, maybe not so much. The question is, what's going to happen now? It's claimed that Thomas Jefferson claimed that an impeachment will become a scarecrow. It becomes a political tool rather than something that would actually prevent abuse of powers. And we'll have to see. Now, here's the question. While we're dealing with these actions against Joe Biden, and more information comes out about the Biden family businesses and whatnot, we have the counterpoint. And that being the investigations, the indictments of former President Donald Trump. Now, these, by the way, are criminal activities and therefore have a different standard. But it seems like every time I turn around, something new comes out about these indictments. In fact, I was just reading from justthefactsdaily.com. They say the recent indictment of Donald Trump alleges that he criminally lied about election fraud when contesting the 2020 presidential elections. In the words of the indictment, Trump, quote, spread lies that there had been outcome determinative fraud in the election and that he actually won. These claims were false, and the defendant knew that they were false. Close quote. Now, the story goes on to say, you know, the indictment claims that Trump lied because he was notified repeatedly that his claims are untrue. He said, often by people on whom he relied for candidate advice. So in other words, he said, people said people told him that these claims were untrue. One example that the indictment accuses Trump of lying because he said more than 30,000 non-citizens had voted in Arizona, even though his own campaign manager had explained to him that such claims were false. And the Speaker of the Arizona House of Representatives, who had supported Mr. Trump in the election, had issued a public statement that there was no evidence of substantial fraud in Arizona. Now, here's what's interesting, because in this case, the indictment specifically talks about this claim of 30,000 and claims that Mr. Trump pulled the figure 30,000, well, out of thin air. And there's just one problem with that. The number 30,000 actually comes from a rigorously documented study, a study vetted by two PhD scholars that was published by the research institute Just Facts. The study was conducted by James Agresti, the organization's president and author, by the way, of the article I'm looking at. And he says that its integrity was reinforced by a Facebook-funded attempt by USA Today to fact-check his study that, well, in his words, fell flat. So he's claiming that a D.C.-based grand jury indicted Trump in part for fighting a factual study instead of claims from the people that he simply deemed reliable. Now, this is important because whether or not the people who were advising Trump told him whether or not something was a lie doesn't mean that he was lying. You know, how many of us have children or no children who you tell them that Santa Claus isn't real and they don't believe you, right? So just because someone you trust says something doesn't necessarily mean that it is true. But to find out that there's actually a study showing that the claims that there's a scientific basis, a fact basis for Trump's claims, well, that puts a whole new spin on the indictment, because now we're being, you know, I've already heard people refer to this DC indictment being basically an indictment of free speech. Well, now we have more examples of that. And really, I have to question, is truth based on consensus or is truth based on facts? Because if a consensus of people say it's true, that doesn't necessarily make it true. And speaking of truth, remember that the district judge, a federal district judge, who put a preliminary injunction against many members of the Biden administration and many agencies in the Biden administration from communicating with social media to suppress free speech? Well, not surprisingly, the Biden administration went to the circuit court to get he appealed to the circuit court, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Apparently, things didn't go so well, at least not for the Biden administration. Judge Jennifer Walker Elrod compared the Biden administration to the mafia. Well, she then walked it back. She said, in these movies that we see with the mob, they don't say and spell things out, but they have these ongoing relationships. They never actually say, go do this or else you're going to have this consequence. But everybody just knows. She said, I'm certainly not equating the federal government with anybody in illegal organized crime, but there are certain relationships that people know things without always saying the or else. She said, what appears to be in the record are these irate statements from time to time from high-ranking government officials that say, you didn't do this yet. And that's my toning down the language. Why haven't you done this yet? She said, it's like jump and how high? Now, it appears the other two judges on the panel, Anita Brown Clement and Don R. Willett, they also were not, they were somewhat concerned with the government's behavior, noting that the government was operating out of the public eye via unsubtle strong-arming and veiled or not-so-veiled threats. That's a really nice social media platform you have there. It would be a shame if something happened to it, was summarized by, I believe, Judge Willett. So I would say there are some examples of the wheels coming off of some of the tyranny. The finally an impeachment of President Biden that looks to actually have some constitutional basis. Not add to that the slapdown at the Fifth Circuit about the evidence of censorship and strong-arm tactics, or as some say, mafia-like tactics by the Biden administration. The evidence that the Biden administration's political prosecution of Mr. Trump may be having some issues as well, at least technically legal issues. Of course, you still got state issues, and there's a lot more going on there. And I do have some other things to get to, some other things, but I do have to take a quick break before I get there. Now, I hope you'll head to the website, constitutionstudy.com. You can find everything we're doing here at the Constitution Study. You can sign up for a mailing list, get notified of what's going on, and be as involved as you would like. You can also ask a question. There's an Ask a Question button. Click that, fill out the form, check the box that says I'd like it answered on America Out Loud Talk Radio, and I will do my best to answer that question as quickly as possible. I think questions are the best way to learn, and if you think you don't feel embarrassed, like, well, no one else is going to ask a question like that. I bet you among our listeners, there are dozens, if not hundreds of people that are asking themselves the very same question. Be the one that's willing to stand out and do so. Of course, you can also head over and buy a book, maybe sign up for the Patriots program. All of it's right there at constitutionstudy.com. Now, one other thing I do is, you know, I have a busy life, right? I cover a lot of hours. And I don't know about you, I get to the end of the day and I start burning out. My brain just kind of starts running on empty. That's when I reach for Healthy Cells Focus and Recall Vitamins. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, vitamins. Not caffeine, not sugar, not energy drinks or shots. Simple vitamins. It works really well. 10, 15 minutes, my short-term focus is back. My brain is firing on all cylinders. And you can find out how to get 25% off Focus and Recall or anything on your first order from Healthy Cell by going to americaoutloud.shop. Just look for the card Healthy Cell, click it for all the details. Basically, go to healthycell.com, use the code OUTLOUD at checkout, and you'll get 25% off your first order. Again, go to healthycell.com, put your card together, but use that code OUTLOUD. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud. And as a thank you, you get 25% off your first order.
Trouble concentrating or recalling information is frustrating, embarrassing, and kills productivity. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Focus and Recall to boost your brain power. And unlike other supplements that don't work, Focus and Recall is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed ingredients to help you immediately sharpen focus and strengthen recall. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order, risk-free. Love it or your money back, guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code Out Loud.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Well, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear. X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
For 25 years, Global Healing has proudly produced the highest quality supplements and cleansing programs that are rooted in nature and backed by science. Get 15% off all of our products using code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Welcome back, everyday Americans, to rejoin the Constitution study. Today we're asking, are the wheels coming off? And actually, we're trying to figure out which theory of governing the wheels are coming off of. Is it the dictatorial, top-down, specialist, elitist-led that form of government that got the wheels coming off, or is it the freedom and independence and rule of law where the wheels are coming off? And I'll tell you, for a long time, the wheels have been coming off the rule of law section. But there are signs that things may be changing. Now, one example where people are saying, see, the wheels are coming off. There was an interesting article in the New York Times. The title was "Conservative Case Emerges to Disqualify Trump for Role on January 6th. Two law professors active in the Federalist Society wrote that the original meaning of the 14th Amendment makes Donald Trump ineligible to hold government office. Now, according to the authors, quote, Section 3's disqualification rule may and must be followed, applied, honored, obeyed, enforced, and carried out by anyone whose job it is to figure out whether someone is legally qualified to office. They went on, Professor Calabresi said those administrators must, quote, must act. He said, quote, Trump is ineligible to be on the ballot on each of the 50 state and each of the 50 state secretaries of state has an obligation to print ballots without his name on them. All right, so here's the what are they basing this on? Well, it's Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which reads, no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elected president and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid and comfort to the enemy thereof. Okay. So there are two things you have to look at here. First is the accusation is that President Trump, I'm assuming that he committed insurrection. All right, well, let's ask first, what is insurrection? Well, according to Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary, insurrection is an act or instance of revolting against civil authority or an established government. Well, what Trump did was complain that, in his words, there was fraud in the 2020 presidential election that cost him the election, that cost him the office. How's that revolting against civil society? He, contrary to the popular myth, he didn't say go and riot. He told the January 6th people to go to demonstrate peacefully and patriotically. By the way, it wasn't against an established government because the government, he wasn't saying the government was invalid. He said there were problems in the election. So now, are you telling me if questioning the validity of an election is insurrection, well, then not only is Donald Trump not qualified to hold office, Hillary Clinton, and many other Democrats who claim that the 2020 election was invalid and that Trump was illegitimate. Well, they've questioned the civil authority established government. Therefore, they've committed insurrection and they are not qualified for office. Oh, by the way, Al Gore would not be qualified for office because according to their standard, he committed insurrection when he challenged the 2000 election. So this is patently ridiculous. This is a drowning man grasping for something, some life ring to protect his scenario. Now, could it be that President Trump committed rebellion? Which again, Merriam-Webster online says opposition to one in authority or dominance. Well, actually, he was still in authority, and he wasn't you can't claim that he was in opposition to himself. Of course, it also means that open, armed, and usually unsuccessful defiance or resistance to an established government. Well, certainly the January 6th meetings, while they were open, and you could really say that if their goal was to change the outcome of the Electoral College, they were unsuccessful, but they were not armed. In fact, the only people armed were the government actors. In fact, the only people that were killed were demonstrators. They were killed by members of the Capitol Police. So to me, this smacks of just desperate measures. There's no justifiable way to describe, I know the Democrats have done it. I've known the media have done it. There is no reasonable, logical, rational way to describe what happened on January 6th or President Trump's participation in it as an insurrection. The reason, and I've said this since it started, that they keep wanting to call it an insurrection is they want to apply the 14th Amendment to prevent Donald Trump from ever becoming president again. The problem we run into is those facts and data versus emotions. And again, these aren't just my ideas. And there are others that point to the actual text and history of the 14th Amendment. Alan Dershowitz, while I disagree with him on a lot of things, he is a professor emeritus at Harvard Law, and he said in an article on the Daily Caller, he said, a fair reading of the text and history of the 14th Amendment makes it relatively clear, however, that the disability provision was intended to apply to those who served the Confederacy during the Civil War. It wasn't intended as a general provision empowering one party to disqualify the leading candidate of the other party in any future elections. Now, while I agree with Mr. Dershowitz that the history of the 14th Amendment was meant to punish those who had participated in the Confederacy, was its intent to be a future thing? I'm not so sure about that. The way the language is written certainly does not limit it to those who participated in the recent rebellion. So that maybe. But again, I've already shown that there's no reasonable look at what happened on January 6th and the ability to call it an insurrection, that it was a revolt against the civil authority. If anything, it was a revolt to reestablish civil authority. Because if you believe that there was fraud in the state elections, that the electoral college, the presidential electors, many of them were illegitimately appointed in violation of the Constitution and laws of the states, well, then the revolt is the application, the fraudulent use, the use of fraudulently appointed electors is the pushback against an established government, because the established government is not the person that sits in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. The established government comes from the text of the Constitution of the United States. So again, to see them grasping, you know, all of the indictments against Mr. Trump that are flimsy at best, this call about the insurrection clause of the 14th Amendment, to me just shows desperation. It looks like the wheels are coming off. By the way, to me, that's a good thing. Because the idea of living under an elite governed country with censorship and political prosecution are not only allowed but becoming commonplace, ladies and gentlemen, that's not a country I want to live in. Because if you can be prosecuted, if you can be denied the ability to run for office or serve in government because of what you say, because of the beliefs you have, well then, we don't live in the land of the free. We don't live in a constitutional republic. We live in an oligarchy where those of the elite get to decide who is and who is not qualified. It's only a few steps away from that to the point of was the Iranian mullahs picking who's going to be on the ballot. Yeah, you get to vote, but you only get to vote for the people we say you can vote for. How long before we simply make it illegal to put Republicans on the ballot? Is it really that crazy? If you're talking about these law professors claiming that President Trump, state secretaries of state should not even consider putting Trump's name on the ballot, ladies and gentlemen, that is tyranny. Or what about a situation where you can lose your license to work because of what you say and what you believe? Take the example of Dr. Tenpenny. She testified back in June of 21 before the House, the Ohio House of Representatives Health Committee. And she testified that she had concerns about the safety of the COVID quote unquote vaccines. By the way, they're not legally vaccines. Now, one of her assertions was that somehow COVID-19 vaccines were causing people to become magnetized. She said they can put a key on their forehead and it sticks. Sounds to me more like a magic trick, but okay, that's her opinion based on what she's observed in her deductions. Apparently, that testimony led to approximately 350 complaints. I'm kind of curious, who was complaining? You have a right to complain as well. What's happened is the Ohio State Medical Board has suspended Dr. Tenpenny's license because they didn't like the way she responded to their investigation. See, it wasn't what they were investigating. They didn't like the way she responded. She said, "My lawyers drafted responses appropriately and sent it back." And they go, "Nope, you didn't cooperate with us." I guess that simply means they didn't like the answers, but it didn't mean that I failed to cooperate. And that's the logic, the reason why the Ohio State Medical Board has suspended Dr. Tenpenny's license. Now, listen, to me, I'm not so sure about this magnetizing people. That one seems a little out there, but I haven't investigated and looked at any evidence of it. But there were other concerns that she had. But here's the point. If you're a doctor that gets muzzled because you don't toe the party line from what has become politicized medical boards, see, medical boards were the idea of we will have doctors making sure doctors are following the rules. The problem is these medical boards have, and along with a lot of other boards, licensing organizations, have become politicized. Now, I don't know all the details. I haven't seen the responses, but I have to admit that my gut instinct is the medical board got complaints from other doctors because she complained that there were maybe issues in the COVID-19 fake vaccines, that the jabs may be dangerous. The medical board said, "Explain yourself," and they didn't like the answer, so they suspended her. But it also gets to another point. See, according to state law, she cannot practice medicine because the board said, "We didn't like the way she responded to this." And that is the state, again, interfering with your ability to conduct your business, to have a career. The state gets to say whether or not you get licensed, and that bothers me. But Paul, who's going to do it? There are plenty of other organizations, non-governmental organizations that don't have the political baggage that could be considered to check. When I was in IT, my certifications didn't come from a government entity. They came from the people who produced the products that they wanted me to work on. And like so many things, you know, the idea of a medical board or any state licensing entity is twofold. On the one hand, if you're dealing with certain things like, again, doctors, lawyers, engineers, you want to make sure they have a certain level of proficiency. And I'm sure that those licensing boards originally, that's what their goal was. The problem is they've been taken over by politics. But here's the other problem. See, they work based on consensus. Somebody can say something that is absolutely true and they can have evidence to prove it. But if it challenges the consensus and we seek consensus over fact, then the truth gets buried under an avalanche of politics and bureaucracy. Now, I do not know if that is what is happening to Dr. Tenpenny, because I don't know the details. But I've seen enough other examples. Dr. McCullough, another one from right here in America Out Loud, who's had his license threatened for pointing to facts and data and studies and information that contradicted the political narrative. Now, that tells me a couple of things. One is the fact that there is a challenge to the political narrative is a good thing. The fact that they feel the need to punish those shows me that maybe the wheels are coming off of these. And again, there are other ways than putting government entities in charge of what's going on. Because these things grow, right? It's like I said, it's one thing to say we're going to license doctors and lawyers and engineers. It's quite another when they're going to license hairdressers, people who braid hair, people who paint nails. I go to my barber, and again, one of the problems he has is he has to get a license every year. He has to go through all this training because he cuts hair. Now, listen, he does a good job cutting my hair, so I go back. It's not like we're talking about life and death situations if you get a bad haircut. But you see, that's what happens when we put government in control. And maybe, just maybe, these overreactions to people who contradict the narrative are examples of the wheels coming off this monopolistic, authoritarian, we will dictate to you what the truth is, and facts and evidence are no longer a defense against what we say is true. Because in order to find the truth, there must be alternate viewpoints. And I suggest you look for alternate viewpoints. And a great place to do that is AmericaOutloud.news. I go there every day for news and information. It's part of my news reading process. But it's important that we take this information, that we share it, that you find the stories and the podcasts, the articles and the videos that mean something to you, that touch you or have an impact or you think are really, really important, and you share them. See, a lot of these attacks are meant to discourage people from sharing information. Don't let the tyrants win. Share this information. That is how you work with us to help secure the blessings of liberty.
Well, the Out Loud Truth was the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.news was an idea, a movement, a place where folks would feel comfortable speaking the truth without being censored or canceled. The First Amendment is alive and well. America Out Loud Talk Radio. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
The pandemic may be over for some, but millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of toxic spike protein from COVID-19 and the vaccines. You've heard Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company discuss the harmful effects of spike protein in your body, and now they found the solution. The miracle enzyme nattokinase. Their spike support formula contains nattokinase, the most compelling and scientifically supported approach to safely clear spike protein out of the body. What's more, spike support is optimized with other all-natural, non-GMO ingredients, like dandelion root, to help prevent spike protein from binding to your cells. Everyone should take daily spike support so you can feel your best. America Out Loud listeners can go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Cofix RX Nasal Solution has completed the circle and is now offering throat spray with povidone iodine. That completes the protocol doctors like Peter McCullough recommend. If staying healthy is important, you'll want to make sure to add throat spray to your next order of Cofix RX. For a limited time and exclusive for America Out Loud listeners only, you can save 25% off your entire order. Let's double down against colds, flus, strep, RSV, HRV, COVID, and more. Click the banner or go to America Out Loud shop to get 25% off your entire order. Use coupon code OUTLOUD25. That's coupon code OUTLOUD25.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. And today, we ask, are the wheels on the bus just falling off? Trust me, you don't want me to sing the song. It's bad enough just thinking about the kids singing it. We've looked at some examples of the wheels coming off of the Biden administration, the indictments against Trump, and several other things. But there are a lot of other things that are going on that the wheels are coming off of. How many years have we heard about we had the sanctuary cities and the sanctuary states and, oh, those poor, terrible, illegal aliens. I know they call them migrants. They aren't legally migrants. Oh, the poor legal aliens. Why, if you come here, we'll treat you so nice. We'll give you food and shelter and clothing and everything will just be wonderful. So they did. It started with Texas, but Florida's gotten into it. I wonder what other states are going to start getting into it. They said, fine, if you want to be sanctuary, if you want these people, have them. Of course, how many people laughed when Martha's Vineyard basically got upset about people being bused to their beautiful little community, only to turn around and bus them somewhere else? Well, now we have, and again, New York City, right? Where I was born. Please don't hold it against me. But they've said, no, sanctuary. Well, we are required. We passed a law that said if you show up here, we give you food and shelter. And now they're eating their words. And again, it's not just New York. New York, Denver, D.C., all over are complaining that, you know what? If we we became a sanctuary city because we wanted to look good, but now the aliens are actually showing up and it's hard and we don't like it. Sorry, it's as close as I can get to a three-year-old throwing a temper tantrum. What I find interesting is these places are complaining about a few hundred, maybe a few thousand aliens showing up in their cities, ignoring the 1.2 million illegal aliens that were accounted in Texas alone in 2022. That's the difference between living in the real world and living in La La Land. You know, oh, Muriel Bowser, we'll just open everything up. And then, of course, people start showing up and suddenly it's a state of emergency. Washington, D.C., was it Denver, Colorado, New York City. And again, many of them are complaining about the Governor Abbott of Texas busing these aliens to them. And, you know, our social services are we can't handle it. We don't have the infrastructure. Oh, what are we going to do? So far, Mr. Abbott has bused about 30,000 migrants to these sanctuary cities. Again, out of the 1.2 million that showed up just in fiscal 2022. And here they are, and they're whining, and they're crying, and of course, they're asking the federal government for money. Why are we surprised? You ask for them to show up, and once they actually do, you want someone else to pick up the bill. You know what? I'm sorry. Denver, D.C., New York, Chicago, you asked for it, you got it. I don't think, you know, I'm here in rural Tennessee. We didn't ask to become a sanctuary county. Why should we pay for your desire to be a sanctuary county? And maybe, just maybe, if you had some real morals, some real character, you'd look at this and say, if we're having this much trouble with a few thousand migrants, maybe what's going on in Texas is a lot worse than we thought it was. To me, it just shows, again, it shows the liberal feel-good, progressive, we just want to be kind to everybody and there are no consequences. It does not work. Once it meets reality, it falls apart. And hopefully that's a lesson we're going to learn. But somehow, my gut says not yet. Well, take a look at what's going on in California. California recently, I believe they passed a bill called SB 596. Let me describe it from the actual text of the bill. It says, existing law provides that any parent, guardian, or other person whose conduct in a place where a school employee is required to be in the course of the employee's duties materially disrupts classwork or extracurricular activities or involves substantial disorder is guilty of a misdemeanor punishable by a fine of not less than $500, not more than $1,000, or by imprisonment in a county jail not exceeding 1 year or both. Okay, so California had that law. This new bill says this bill will provide that any parent, guardian, or other person who interferes as specified with a school employee's daily life away from a school site or after school hours for reasons related to the employee's course of duties is guilty of a misdemeanor punishable as for the offense described above. By defining a new crime, this bill will impose a state mandated local program. So in other words, it was already in California. You if you were a school employee, you were special. See, if you work anywhere else except government and someone disrupts the work that you're doing, well, maybe you can get them for disorderly conduct. But if you're a school employee, all you have to do is disrupt, again, disrupting classwork, extracurricular activity. Okay, I can see that. That's a misdemeanor. But now what they want to say is, oh, no. If you disrupt a school employee's daily life, meaning if you get a paycheck from a school, you're special. In other words, it's not just that you're disrupting school and thereby impacting other people. Oh, no, you're disrupting the employee's life. I thought we had this little thing called the 14th Amendment and about equal protection under the law. If you're telling me that as an employee of a school, I get one set of protections, but as an employee of a private organization, I get different protections, that's a violation of the 14th Amendment. That means this law is void, right? Of course, it's still going to be in place because California, they love their little communist, progressive, leftist, Marxist little rules and edicts, and let's just create a protected political class. Isn't it interesting how we always come up with classes when we're dealing with the Marxists? And not so much when we're dealing with the actual people who believe in rights and liberty. And again, it's not just government actors. Very often these government actors, they get help from private sector organizations, like the Southern Poverty Law Center. I love it. They have their own hate map where they mark out people that they think are hateful. And of course, they kind of lump into that anti-government groups, you know, like Moms for Liberty, you know, groups that actually are trying to help parents protect their children, the fundamental right of a parent to control the education and medical care of the child, the moral upbringing of their child. That, to the SPLC, is considered a hate group, which, by the way, is probably the reason why I think the federal government is not allowed to use SPLC for this type of information, even though there's evidence that they do. But I want you to think about it. If the SPLC feels the need to put parental rights groups, calling parents that are engaged in school boards and express themselves as anti-government groups, doesn't that feel like the government's losing control? That the whole idea of we have to identify you as a hate map because you don't simply bow down to government. See, this is the wheels coming off, and this is the drowning man clutching for something to do. What I mean, people are questioning what government does. We have to do something. We have to do something, and they flail and they attack. It's one of the reasons why it's so dangerous to try and rescue a drowning person. They very often will do you harm in a panicked attempt to protect themselves. Now, what should you do in a situation like that? Well, you need to stand up. You need to stand up and do something. You need to fight back, not simply be dragged under by the drowning person. Well, like this gentleman out of Texas, Jeremy Story. He said, I was arrested and jailed for exposing the misdeeds of trustees and administrators. You see, back in September of 21, Mr. Story was at a school board meeting. And he was, and again, there's footage of this. There's actually public available footage. He was trying to raise concerns about the school superintendent, who at the time was facing allegations of family violence, and there was an application for a protective order against him. Now, according to the footage, the then president of the Round Rock Independent School District Board of Trustees, and Amy Weir, warned Story not to speak about something other than D1 or D2, which I guess is some bullet points on their agenda. Mr. Story said, I'll show you how my comments are related to that. He kept getting interrupted by the president and was eventually arrested. Yeah, he was arrested. He was arrested for hindering proceedings by disorderly conduct, a misdemeanor. at which point he was, again, arrested and escorted out. Now, he's had his day in court, and according to a district court judge in Texas, the school district was wrong. So apparently Mr. Story sued. The U.S. district judge found that the school board violated his First Amendment rights. All right, that's wrong. They said by limiting seating capacity in one school board meeting, by retaliating against him for engaging in constitutionally protected speech, and by barring him from a meeting that was open to the public, to public participation. Again, it can't be First Amendment because Congress didn't make those laws. First five words of the First Amendment: Congress shall make no law. The judge also found that the police had violated Mr. Story's Fourth Amendment protected rights against unreasonable seizure and false arrest, and that the school board president violated the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. Now, to me, what I see here is the school boards have had control. No one's challenged the school board. People are starting to push back, and it looks like maybe some of their tyrannical tactics are starting to not only come to the light of day, but they're starting to be pushed back on by citizens and judges alike. We can only hope. Keep an eye on this particular case. Now, a couple of other things that I want you to consider, not so much wheels coming off, but maybe things you want to keep an eye on. Well, for example, remember the affirmative action case, the Harvard case, that where the court said, no, you cannot use race as a primary basis for determining eligibility. I talked about that. I did a radio program about that. I wrote an article about that. Well, interesting enough, the Biden administration recently released diversity guidance. See, it was announced that the Department of Justice and the Department of Education are circulating a document that has guidance about how to get around the court's decision that you can't cure racism by being racist. That shouldn't be a surprise. But what we're seeing is, again, the tyrants lose. They simply try to find a way to go around all that. It's the good old-fashioned by hook or by crook. But if they're having to devolve to how do we get around the courts, it means they're losing control. Now, the question is, are the American people going to see these as opportunities to stand up and protect their rights, defend their rights, assert and defend their rights? Or are those who see these infringements on our rights going to say, hey, see, we've won a couple, and they're going to take their ball and go home? To me, that's always been the problem with the American people, is we win the battle, but we go home rather than finishing the war. By war, I don't mean as an armed conflict. I mean an actual war for the hearts and minds of the American people, for the future of this republic. Will it be a republic where it is recognized that the people have power, that they vest some of their power in elected representatives that work for them? Or is it going to be the Marxist utopianist that said, no, government will do everything, as Klaus Schwab said, you'll own nothing and enjoy it? That's the war that we're fighting. It's not these isolated little things are battles in a larger war, a larger conflict between the Marxists and the liberties, and the idea of rights and freedoms and liberty. You see, we have to decide, will there be freedom and justice for all, or only the people that are specially identified by the government? Will we have our freedom of speech, or will we have censorship? And then what are the consequences of that decision? The consequence of saying, we're going to ignore the law. We're actually going to flout the law, tell people to break the law, and we'll protect them, and then deal with the consequences. See, we should be looking at these consequences and saying, maybe there is a better way. See, if we're looking at the wheels coming off the Marxist agenda in this country, how about we not fix them? How about we recognize that, no, the wheels on the Republic are sound, on the Constitution, on the rights and liberties and freedom and equal protection of the law and all of those ideals we keep holding up. Because we need to recognize you cannot have freedom and Marxism. They do not coexist. You cannot have liberty and totalitarianism. They do not coexist. And sadly, there are a lot of people that think we can go from a place where rights are protected to a place where wills are enforced and not lose all the benefits of freedom. That we can still be the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world, even if we give up what got us there and replace it with what has destroyed so many other countries in the world. Call it learning from history. Call it seeing the wheels falling off. Call it just plain common sense. We, the American people, have to decide what our future is going to look like. Is it going to be driven by elitists who think they know what's best for us? Or will we have the liberty and freedom to do what we think is best, to pursue what makes us happy rather than what makes other people happy? Isn't that the American dream? It's not the home with the white picket fence and the 2.5 kids. No, the American dream is pursuing with the opportunity to gain what makes you happy. Are you willing to give that up for the false promises of being taken care of? Now, I hope you come back and join us here at the Constitution Study. We're here every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard in the iHeartRadio Network. If you can't listen then, we'll catch us on the podcast. Every episode goes to podcast, generally a day or two after it's heard on the radio. And you can find it on your favorite podcast app. But do me a favor, subscribe to the show. Leave us ratings and reviews. It helps other people find the Constitution Study. You can find all the links you need at the homepage at AmericaOutLoud.news. But as with everything else, I ask you to share this information because that helps to share the blessings of liberty.